Very good. All right, this morning we have this parable, which is really difficult. I don't know about you, but I think this is a very difficult parable. I mean, none of them are really easy, but this one is difficult, and it reminded me of someone who was one of our members when we were in Arizona, and he had come back to the faith after many years, just many years. I don't know exactly how many. It must have been 30 or more. And he starts coming back. His grandson brought him along. And he came a long way, and he still was going a long way. And I went to visit him at his house once, and he's really nervous. And he said, "You know, the last time a pastor came to my house, I was little, and we were all in trouble." You were coming, I don't know. But, you know, he got over that and was growing in the faith. And one Sunday we were there at church, and I was sharing some things about Jesus, which were not the usual thoughts. I've done that with you from time to time, as you may recall. So he says, right in the middle of the sermon, if you can picture this, he says, "Well, that's not my Jesus." I let that go. But I was thinking, I didn't know that Jesus was his Jesus. I just didn't know that. I thought Jesus like was Lord of all, and that's the way that it was. But still, he was at a point in his faith, he was saying, "This is my Jesus. My Jesus is just like this, not like what you're describing." So you may have thought that from time to time in different things that I've shared. And let me just give you a half a spoiler alert. You might be thinking that later this morning. Okay, so take notes if you like, whatever you need to do. Here we go. Notice that Jesus ended this gospel by saying, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." All that brings out the question is, how do I serve just one? And since we're a Christian church, how do I serve Jesus as my only master? How do you get to that point? The answer is very simple. It is, the first thing you do is receive the love of Jesus. You receive that first, and everything else flows from that. We love Jesus, the Apostle John says, because he first loved us. It's not the other way around, which a lot of people can fall into that kind of way of thinking. Well, if I love Jesus, then he'll love me. If I do the right thing, then he'll love me. If I follow his commands, then he'll love me. And it's all the other way around. Anything we do in following Jesus is because he first loved us. And that's how you get to be following Jesus as your only master, is receiving that love first before anything else follows. Now, a lot of people will think that we have to live the right way for Jesus to love us, and that can come from all kinds of sources. Maybe a tough family life growing up as a child where there was a lot of demand, or from an abusive authority figure, you know, maybe your first boss at your first job, something like that. But none of that is the way Jesus thinks. Jesus thinks this way: I love you just the way you are right now, right at this moment, fully. I fully, completely love you. No conditions, no strings attached, no hoops, just the way you are right now. And that's the key to having Jesus as your only master. And this parable brings out a few things about that I want to share with you this morning. And just a little something about parables. They're not allegories. They're not metaphors. They're not fancy literary devices. It's just, a parable is a current thing that happens that demonstrates a spiritual principle. It's a demonstration, you might say. And Jesus used a lot of situations from his day to describe true principles. And when Jesus is talking about the unjust manager here and the way this manager handled his problem, everyone could picture exactly what was going on. because they knew it. They knew what it was. You know, all the businesses were close together, usually in the same town or village. Everybody did business with everybody else, and everybody knew what was going on in the way that the business was conducted. So there, you know, this was clear to everyone. Maybe not as clear to us until we look at it for a while. And the same happened last week. You may recall the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin. All those were situations that everybody would have known what was going on, and it showed a spiritual principle, something that was true. So here we have the unjust manager. And we have Jesus saying things that seem to contradict other things that Jesus said. Jesus, we found, has this annoying habit of doing this in the Gospels. And so, for example, he says, and his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. Now, right away, there's trouble picturing Jesus saying something like that. And then he goes on. He just doesn't stop there. He goes on, for the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. So, like, whose side is Jesus on here? You know, who's he want on his team? And then, and I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes. And, you know, what's this mean? In the meantime, we're in jail? Is it, you know, because of what's going on? I mean, this sounds crazy to us in what we think of Jesus. And I think of my friend back in Arizona, and we feel like saying, well, that's not my Jesus. Well, I hope it gets to be your Jesus and mine. See, Jesus is commending the dishonest manager because he exercised grace. And that grace saturated the debtors and his master as well. It's the exercise of grace going on here. Now, let me try to clarify that for you. Make it real. And I just have a short quiz at this point. Who in this parable is the Christ figure, do you think? Bobby.
Is it the manager?
The unjust manager is the Christ figure. Go to the head of the class. Excellent answer. All right, how about Bobby over here? Yes, absolutely. It is not the master. It's not the people who were the customers. It is the unjust manager is the Christ figure. I kind of gave it away when I said he acted in grace. Now, you don't have to answer this, but have you ever heard a preacher tell you that before? Have you ever heard a preacher say that? That the unjust manager is the Christ figure here? Well, you heard it first here at St. Francis. Why do I say that? Because he showed grace to the debtors. For no reason except he did it. He said, oh, you owe this much? Okay, just erase this portion. That'll be fine. And then he goes to the master, and the master says, whoa, that is excellent. Look at what you've done. This great. You know what? I should be more like you. I should act with grace. I should have grace towards more people. This is the way my life should be, not the way that it is now. I should be someone filled with grace so that I can show grace. See, grace saturated everything from the heart of the unjust manager. Everybody okay? All right. Okay. Very good. What Jesus is telling us is to have that same kind of laser-sharp focus. And that is to receive and demonstrate the grace of God. That would mark our lives. The thing that we do is we receive and then demonstrate the grace of God. We receive from God the love God has for us, the grace God wants to give us, and then that flows out of us all around, everywhere, to the ones we're responsible to, as well as the ones who report to us, or whatever configuration your life takes at this point, that it spreads all over the place. So the question, I think, comes up, how to receive and show the grace of God and then have that laser-sharp focus on Jesus as your only master. Because once you have received the grace of God and the love of God, then we have the capacity to follow Jesus as our one and only master. Without receiving the grace and the love of God, we do not have the capacity to follow Jesus as our one and only master. The capacity we have is to do whatever we want. From Him, we get the capacity to do whatever He wants. Receive the love that Jesus has for you is the first step. Now notice, it's not put all your love on Jesus is the first step. Because we can't do that on our own power. It's impossible on our own power to pour all our love upon Jesus. We first receive the love of Jesus, and then we're capable of pouring all our love out on Jesus. Remember a few minutes ago, we looked at the Apostle John. We love him because he first loved us. That's the way it goes. Now, it sounds a little difficult. You know, maybe we don't like the way that it sounds. Where, you know, you don't get any points if you love Jesus first. You just don't. There's no bonuses. Nothing. You don't get a step ahead in any way. Because we really can't do that. You know, we love ourselves. We love other things. We love all sorts of other things. It's the love of Jesus first that we get when his love is poured on us and we receive it. When you receive the love of Jesus that Jesus has for you, then something happens to your heart. You're made new and you're able to love Jesus in ways you were not able to love Jesus before, because that capacity comes from him. What Jesus wants to do is to pour his love into your life right now, and receiving it is how, as we've been saying, you get the ability to follow him. When you have received the love of Jesus, you have received his grace. Remember, Jesus once said, "If you love me, you will obey my commands." Now, if you just haven't let Jesus pour his love on you first, you will read this verse as saying, "You will prove that you love me when you obey me." If you receive the love of Jesus first and let that start transforming, then you read it this way. "Because you've received my love, you're able to love me and do what I ask." See, it depends which lens you have on. The lens of doing it first on our own, or the lens of grace. The lens of grace says, if you have received my love, then you're able to do everything and anything I ask. You're able to do it. Which is different from required to do it. It's always about receiving from Jesus and then following in the path of what we have received. It's always that Jesus will tell you in an infinite number of ways that he loves you just exactly the way you are right now. And that's what gives you the power to follow him. Is there a reason going around in your mind right now that tells you not to receive the love and grace of Jesus? Is there something going around in your mind or in your heart that says, I can't receive the love of Jesus now because, you know, whatever it is, I haven't done right, I've sinned, I haven't memorized the whole Bible, you know, whatever it is. I want to suggest, because Jesus wants to pour his love on you no matter what that objection is, I want to suggest that you ask God to show you the answer to that objection, which will be something about how he loves you. And then ask him what will make the gospel real for you. But we'll make the gospel real in your life. And it'll have something to do with Jesus pouring his love on you in the way that you would receive all of it. I think that the more we do that, the more we'll be like him, which is where we're going anyway. Would you please stand?